In 1936, my interests began to change. Jean was Robert's truest love. He loved her the most. He was devoted to her. Robert Serber. Jean Tatlock was only 22 years old when Robert met her in the spring of 1936. They were introduced at a party hosted by Oppie's landlady, Mary Ellen Washburn, in the house on Shasta Road. Jean was finishing her first year at Stanford University School of Medicine, which was then located in San Francisco. That autumn, Oppenheimer recalled, he began to court her and we grew close to each other. Jean was a shapely woman with thick, dark, curly hair, hazel blue eyes with heavy black lashes, and naturally red lips. Some thought she looked like an old Irish princess. 5'7" tall, she never weighed more than 128 pounds. She had but one tiny physical imperfection, a sleeping eyelid that drooped slightly as a result of a childhood accident. But even this barely perceptible flaw added to her allure. Her beauty captivated Robert, but so too did her shy melancholy. Jean was very private about her despair, a friend, Edith A. Jenkins, later wrote. Robert knew her as the daughter of Berkeley's eminent Chaucer scholar, Professor John S. P. Tatlock, one of the few faculty members outside the physics department with whom he had a more than casual acquaintance. Over lunch at the faculty club, Tatlock was often dazzled by the knowledge of English literature displayed by this young physics professor. In turn, when Oppenheimer met Jean, he quickly realized that she had soaked up her father's literary sensibilities. Jean favored the dark, morose verse of Gerard Manley Hopkins. She also loved the poems of John Donne, a passion that she passed on to Robert, who, years later, turned to Donne's sonnet Batter My Heart, Three-Personed God, for inspiration in assigning the codename Trinity to the first test of an atomic bomb. Jean owned a roadster that she often drove with the top down, singing in her fine contralto voice lyrics from Twelfth Night. A free-spirited woman with a hungry, poetic mind, she was always the one person in the room, whatever the circumstances, who remained unforgettable. A college classmate at Vassar remembered her as the most promising girl I ever knew, the only one of all that I saw around me in college that even then seemed touched with greatness. Jean was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan on February 21, 1914, and she and her older brother Hugh grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and later in Berkeley. Her father had spent most of his career at Harvard, but after retiring, he began teaching at Berkeley. When Jean was 10, she began spending her summers on a Colorado dude ranch. A childhood friend and college classmate, Priscilla Robertson, would write in a letter addressed to Jean after her death, "You had a wise mother who gentled you and never tried to break you, and yet who kept you from the dangers of your passionate kind of adolescence." Before she went to Vassar College in 1931, her parents allowed her a year off to travel in Europe. She stayed with a friend of her mother's in Switzerland who was a devoted follower of Carl Jung. This family friend introduced Jean to the close-knit community of psychoanalysts centered around Freud's former friend and rival. The Jungian school, with its emphasis on the idea of the collective human psyche, strongly appealed to the young Tatlock. By the time she left Switzerland, she was seriously interested in psychology. At Vassar, she studied English literature and wrote for the college's Literary Review. This daughter of an English scholar had spent much of her childhood listening to her parents reading aloud the works of Shakespeare and Chaucer. As a teenager, she had spent 2 full weeks at Stratford-on-Avon, seeing a performance of Shakespeare each night. Both her intellect and her stunning good looks intimidated her classmates. Jean always seemed mature beyond her years, having gotten by nature and experience a depth that most girls don't get until after graduation. She was also what would later be called, in irony, a premature anti-fascist, an early opponent of Mussolini and Hitler. When a professor gave her Max Eastman's Artists in Uniform, hoping that it might serve as a sobering antidote to her woolly-headed admiration of Russian communism, Jean confided to a friend, "I just wouldn't want to go on living if I didn't believe that in Russia everything is better."